a lot of challenges in hell. Let alone that the passion that is shown by the National Development Offense gives us hope, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, especially in hell, looking at the challenges that we see every day that when we walk around. So with that, remember, can we start the meeting? Well, because the Council of Medical Aid Schemes that is going to be telling us about their strategic plan, since they're getting some money from the Department of Health and they're working for health, so we definitely need to hear from them, since they're getting money from Parliament too, through the Department of Health. So we need to hear from them what they're going to be doing, so that we can oversight them too and look at what things are they doing. I know that somebody who's going to come later here was complaining about the medical aid. I don't know which one. So I'm going to ask her to meet the registrar, since the registrar is here. So it's somebody who's working in working here in Parliament. It's a minor problem. I think it's going to be sorted out. But as long as you remember the registrar, that there's somebody that you have to see before you go. Remember that CMS, I think CMS has been here for some for many times, but maybe for the sake of those who are new, let's introduce ourselves and tell them who we are, and they can introduce themselves. Let's start with Mam Ngcobo to tell us who she is.
I'm Beatrice Ngcobo. Thank you. Hi, I'm Sharon McDuffie, member of the committee. Over 100 billion rand, and therefore
come up with to deliver services to medical aid members. But many of these schemes and arrangements that they develop also challenge the way that we do regulation and implement and monitor regulation. And what we have found over the last number of years is that the council's capacity to deal with this has been lagging. Last year we presented a budget which was focused at increasing and building the capacity to try and catch up on some of this backlog that we've had within the council for a number of years. With the concurrence of the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Health, it was agreed that this increased capacity be phased in over a two-year period. And this budget that we're presenting here today is the second part of that phasing period in order to smooth a little bit the bump in the increase that we have presented to yourself last year. Chair, with that in mind, I'm going to hand over to the registrar to do the detailed presentation, and we will be supported by Dan and Bosel. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Chairman.
Maybe before you start, Register, there's someone who came a little bit late. Namashar, can you introduce yourself?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm Lusizo Makubela Mashele.
She's another member of the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson of the committee and members of the committee for giving us an opportunity to again come before you and present our strategic plan together with the annual performance plan and the budget. Just a small correction on the documentation that was sent to you some time ago last year in terms of the requirements in the statute. This is the 2012-2013 budget. Not the 2010-2011 as it is reflected in front of you. What we will do is we will show you the revisiting of the Council for Medical Schemes strategic goals and the progress with attaining these goals. And this will be done by my colleague, Eboshoff, in the office. He will mention and talk about the revised strategic planning process, strategic goals, and the NHI submission that was invited by the Department of Health. We will then, the last part of the presentation, is talk about just the budget itself from the Chief Financial Officer, and that's correction I have mentioned. Chairperson and members of the committee, it really humbles me to present these two aspects to you, precisely because you will hear during this presentation, first and foremost, that the increase per member, or that rather even per family per year, has been mega over the period, over the coming period for us, so mega that it has been only an increase from 21.22 to 24.39 per family per year. This is all meant to meet the affordability of the majority of South Africans who belong to a medical aid, and you'll hear more about that. Mr. Karim Hossein has mentioned to you that this network regulating has been complex, increasingly complex, and we have been coping. I want to report to you that we've been coping over the period of time, and we'll continue to do so with the support that we're getting from yourselves, the department, and the ministry. Just want to also to mention that we're doing that because we have got enough capacity and the skill within the office to do this in order to enforce the requirements as we find in the Medical Schemes Act. We continue to talk, not only talk, but walk the talk on prospective regulation that is preventing the issues that might arise as we are navigating through this big industry that we have been mandated to regulate. We will soon be presenting to you, and I'll talk about that in a minute, the amendments to this act that will make our work easy to proceed moving on forward. And then just lastly, we will talk as well about the fact that the budget that has been presented to you according to the requirements right after the concurrence by the without fear or favor in a developing environment that we are now aware of. Chairperson and members, the healthcare environment will have to change with the full implementation of the NHI. Not only the medical schemes will have to change and evolve, ourselves as the Council are well positioned and geared to undertake this task. CMS will continuously engage with the Department of Health during the forthcoming years to ensure that the Council of Medical Schemes focuses its strategic activities on those matters which best support the full development of equitable universal access. There are four focus areas. There are four focus areas that we have developed, we have adopted as the Council for Medical Schemes from the seven focus areas that we had before over the last 10 years or so. During this period and during our focus, we want to zoom into the transformation of the industry as well. Membership should better reflect the demographics of the country than it has been the case in the past. We also intend to focus on the not only on the demographics of the membership, but also on the trustees, so that the people who are governing the schemes and their service providers, in order to make sure that the needs amendments to democratize that environment is achieved. We intend, obviously, during this focus, proposing elections on a single day when it happens. This has not been the case in the medical industry, where elections will take many days and end, during which time a lot of things that we find unsavory are taking place. A single day election day is refined with most of our electoral processes in South Africa, just like we find a similar thing for the school government bodies, those who still have children attending their school, that we intend to introduce in the medical aid industry as well. Also, the addition of the primary health care in the PMBs. PMB stands for prescribed minimum benefits. We want to introduce that so that we try and prevent, or rather make sure that we avoid having most expensive healthcare interventions, whether they could have been prevented at an early stage and at a prescribed level. We intend doing this. We have a lot of discussions within the office, in particular the council and the ministry and Department of Health in this regard. There is a strategy in place to do this. Continuing on these four focus areas, Chairperson, is that there has been a national health insurance submission that was invited by the Department of Health to all people in South Africa, and a lot of those submissions were made, and we made some as well, even though we also contributed to the development of what should be an ideal NHI system in South Africa. So our comprehensive comments on the NHI Green Paper were made. We must continue basically to regulate the medical schemes environment to protect the NHI development. Regulation of the private health care providers is a necessity for us to say, and we now know that the Minister of Health has made it public, and yourselves as an oversight in that process, that health is a public good, and if then it is a public good, we need to make sure that it is accessible and it is affordable. Our duty is to identify those areas that need to be strengthened, that need to be improved, and we find that the private healthcare providers and private hospitals, in particular, are the ones that need regulation much more efficient and effective than we have to date. We have, and I have in the office, authorized interaction not only with local and national institutions, but international ones as well, including the OECD countries, where we attend. And we have recently attended a workshop in this regard, which you'll hear a little bit more later on the private hospital environment that we know, ourselves as members of parliament and representatives of the public, as well as the Department of Health, are concerned about. We intend, of course, the challenge is that to regulate this sector is a manner that is beneficial to the public, and we intend to do just that. Just to reiterate again, Chairperson, for memories, the four goals that we have consolidated as a Council for Medical Schemes that we would like ask for your support in us attaining these, your continued support and guidance as an oversight enough. More can be done. And it is through processes like these that we want to ask for the support and go from our board. The other recommendation is the last part of my presentation that we want to make that will be presented to the Department of Health in particular, that is the amendment to this Man's Health Systems Act that has now been in existence for 12 years. The discussions with the department are ongoing with regards to this. It is a process that is driven by them, assisted and informed by us. There are numerous small changes that need to be made in this legislation that require improvement in the regulatory effectiveness. This process, you will recall, Chairperson and honorable members, that it was put on hold for more than it is necessary to do so, understandably so, because there was talk on how to develop the NHI going on forward. So amending this act was not a priority at the time. We now feel more more convinced than ever before that if we hold on amending this medical act, we will not be able, as a Council for Medical Schemes, to regulate as efficiently and effective as we have been doing so far. We want to protect those gains. We want to ensure that the protection of the members continues, and it can only be done at this point in time by amending this act. So I know that we have reported to this before you. I just wanted to report now that we have concluded the process that will inform the specific areas in the act that need to be amended even during the time of the development and implementation of the NHI. Please, when we do so, and when we put, or rather the Department of Health, through our own assistance, when it puts it before you at legislative level, support it, because I would have informed you, as I'm doing now, that there is a real and a dire need for us to do this. There are key amendments that we have and what we intend to make changes in pertain to the governance provisions to ensure that there is a clear separation between medical scheme, which is a non-profit entity, and any third-party contractors such as administrators, managed care organizations, marketing companies, and others. We will make sure that this happens, so by the time you have it, you will certainly, it is our duty. We're committed to do this. At this point in time, Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to my colleague just to give you some hard facts, to give you a report to you as a health portfolio committee, our observations in a manner that is clear, in a manner that is giving a strategic view over the next 3 years, and now that we have got the budget that we have approved and all the parties that I mentioned in it before have done so. I hand it over to you, Dr. Senegal.
Thank you, Chairperson. This first slide just puts in context the magnitude of the medical industry. Notice that the largest amount of money spent on health is that spent by the public sector, being 120 issues here is what the non-health costs, in other words, the cost you spend on your medical scheme contributions that goes to the medical scheme that is not spent on healthcare. It's spent on administration or marketing or broker fees, etc. There was a sharp increase in that between 1998, 2000, when the Act was introduced, up to 2005. And I think the important point here is to understand that hand of increased workload on the council, because we get more complaints, we have to adjudicate on that, people appeal those decisions, they go to the appeal board, and that in fact is a, I think an important indicator of the activities of the council for medical schemes. We also, to be responsive, we also need to be effective. We can't be spending millions on IT systems and staff and HR, internal finance systems and processes. We have to be smarter and more effective at how we reduce that supporting expenses, that it doesn't go above the 40% target which we set ourselves. We've got to strengthen the legal and clinical units to deal with these challenges, strengthening prospective regulation, spoke about the communication line, benefit definitions, and the composite risk index. What we've done is we've used scheme risk measurement data, the iFinancials. We're looking at a whole range of indicators, data sets which we're collecting, and we're building an index that tells us that scheme faces a risk of failure. We need to intervene and pay more regulatory attention to that particular scheme than the other ones. That's something we've introduced, and we're working and refining on that, and we're having good cooperation from the industry. Collaborate with us in developing that risk index, because we want to make sure that members are safe and protected and that their schemes don't fail. And we're making our information more accessible. All the data we use to produce the annual reports and all the annexures in future will also be available as Excel annexures for researchers and analysts to comment on. The last one is fourth goal is providing financial strategic advice and support for the development and implementation of health policy, which includes the support of the NHI development process. And we must make sure that we harmonize our policies. As organs of state, we can't speak a different language than other organs of state, so therefore we have to collaborate with the department and with other regulators. And we need to do general research and advice, and we must support the government processes. In this respect, we've served on the NHI Ministerial Advisory Committee subcommittees. We've done extensive work with Council, and the full office has actually collaborated and produced a submission on the NHI Green Paper. We've recently done work with the Health Professions Council on the determination of the ethical tariff list, which has a large influence on what the fees are charged by healthcare professionals. We've worked with the Department of Health and the Competition Commission, and with them attended the OECD roundtable discussion on competition in the private sector and regulation of the private sector. We're assisting the Competition Commission with a market study presently, who are currently studying the healthcare market to see what is the most appropriate interventions in this area. All indications are that this market is failing. It's international experience that there has to be a regulatory intervention in this environment, and working with them on that. Thank you, Chairperson. That's my portion.
Thank you, Chair. When all our strategic focus has been outlined, then we will come to the figures. I'm just going to indicate, Chairperson, the main key elements that impacted our budget. I think in our introductory remarks, the registrars indicated, or the member of the chair of council has indicated, that we were given last year a 24% increase that we must face in over the 2 years. Last year we implemented 8.6%. This year we had to increase the levies by about 14%. But the main key drivers of our budget are the legal fees. But in order to mitigate against this high increase in legal fees this year, we had introduced a position of a senior legal officer, which might reduce the legal fees that we spend on consulting outside. You will see later this year, when we come to present our annual report for 2011-2012, the amount of legal fees we've spent in this financial year that we've just come from. But fortunately, we've also recovered some of the legal fees in that regard to the tune of about 6.3 million. When we win these cases, because of the capacity we have and the consulting we have, we're awarded costs, as you know, in the legal circles. So this year we managed to that regard. And I think if you are aware that Advert has already gone out because this budget has been approved already, as we've indicated. In order also to deal with the marketing issues related to Skimu, we also want to strengthen our benefit management units, where we will appoint a marketing material analyst, the clinical analyst to assist in the resolution of clinical complaints has already been appointed as well. And I've also indicated that we will also be appointing a senior legal advisor in order to reduce the kind of legal fees we're paying. The other influencing factor in this year's budget, our general salary increase to our staff members, which takes effect now on the 1st of April, was about 7%. So the increase to our salary was about 7%. And in our budgetary process this year, we did not take into account the surplus funds that we normally have at the end of the financial year. And I think it was through the advice of the chairperson of the finance committee, Mr. Karim, who advised that if we do that, we actually are depleting our funds in the first months when we still needed to have our levy approved. But that we mitigated in this regard, because this year we submitted our budget much more earlier and it was actually approved in time, and we did not have that particular issue. We also do some salary survey so that we can see how competitive we are in terms of payment of our employees with other similar regulating entities. And it was found that at least 20% of our staff members are paid below the market level, and most, about 80% were paid well, in par or above the market level. So we've asked for a salary adjustment to those who, a minimum of 20% of our staff members of a salary adjustment in terms of that salary. That is the second 6.1% that we affected. There are other issues, administrative issues that we deal with regards to telephone, the rental of the office and all this. I think it's detailed in the document that you have before you. We will answer questions if you have any in that regard. But generally, after we've taken all that into consideration, we had proposed a levy of 24.39, that is per member per year. If we say per family, it means a principal member, only a principal member is paying, we're charging him or her 24.39, which is an increase of about 3.17 a year. And in total, it comes to about 14.9%, which is what we have explained that National Treasury has said we must phase in this over a period of 2 years. As you can see, last year we increased our levies by about 8.9%. So this year, that we've now concluded the advice we got from National Treasury. We'll see in the 2013-2014 budget what amount of increase we can put in our budget, given the complexity that we're facing going towards the regulation of the industry and also the budget reforms, I mean the health reforms that are taking place in the country, in particular the NHS development process. Chairperson, I do not want to go into all the detailed figures. As I'm indicating, you've got the detailed figures. If you have any questions related to that, you can put those questions. That's where we'll end our presentation, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. The chair today. So thank you very much. Thank you, Register. Thank you, Safer. Thank you, Dr. Poshoff. It's supposed to be the same. It's not supposed to be the name. Okay, members, that's the presentation from the regulator of the medical aid. This is an organization that was formed legally, so to regulate the medical aid scheme. But the interesting thing is that we are regulating the medical aid industry, but some of those medical aid, they pay the hospitals. We seem to be taking most of the money, and one wonders who regulates them, or indirectly.
the money from the military. Now they prefer that the people must pay cash. And that cash was amounting to 3,400 and something. Then I could manage to, I managed to pay it. Maybe because I do have a credit card. But I asked myself, if it is an ordinary person, how was he going to do it? And what I asked the doctor there, the specialist said that the medical aid takes long time to pay. Then I want to know how are you helping this? Thank you, Chair.
We were joined by another member, Honorable Roberts. Later on. Honorable Roberts, I am the Council of Medical Aid Schemes here. Those are the ones representing us. Thank you,
Chair. My question, thank you for the presentation. My question is going to be based on it. I just wanted to find out the rent. Why did the rent increase so much? Because previously your rent was 4.5 million. Now it has increased to 5.2 million. It's about almost 15%, 15.7%. Now I just wanted to find out, is it not much better to own your own building or buy a building instead of rent, instead of renting, because the cost of renting went so high? The other thing that I've observed here is about the legal fees that have been brought down. Your legal fees were 6.2 million. Now it has been decreased to 4.2 million. And when you read it in somewhere in your report, it really says that the CMS showed that there was an upward trend in the litigation against the council. What has been done to increase the litigation, and what are the consequences to increase the litigation? And I don't understand why there's also a decrease in terms of your legal fees if you are seeing so many litigations against the council. And second to that, I realize that also there is an increase in terms of the security cost. That is more than 100%. Why is such a sharp increase? Maybe you can explain to us. Secondly, still on the expense, there is also a new item that is called International Partnership Program. It costs about 240,000. I just wanted to find out what does it entail, what is the reason for that. Maybe you can clarify to us. My last question, Chair, is regarding Program 1, based on the Office of the CEO. And just say that here, there's only one indicator for the Office of the CEO and the Register. That is the strategic indicator, just to have one meeting with the regulator from another country in each financial year. Now, why was it only one indicator, and why was it only chosen, especially in relation to meeting the regulators from other countries? Does this indicator speak to the core function of the council? And the last one, why was the structure of the administration program broken into two, that is to create the office of the CEO program and corporate service? What is the impact in terms of this structure? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Michael. Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the Council for Medical Aid Scheme. Most of the questions I had around complaints and litigation have been asked. So I'd ask the general question for the person out there who is a member of the Medical Aid Scheme. As a Council for Medical Aid Scheme, how much do your users know about you? How do you popularize this council so that the users know there is this council, except in the cases where they want to make complaints? The other question, which is not pertinent to what you are saying today, but which is really a reality to medical aid schemes, is that one of cancer, where drugs these are the only drugs that can help them. Finally, if a husband has got one medical is in one scheme and the wife is in one scheme, and then one of them wants to add his wife as a member, then what happens in that case?
But I don't want the talk of 8 million members. Is that 8 million the principal members, or it covers even the other secondary members to just the officers? Honorable Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to follow up something that was mentioned by my colleague about what people know about yourself. What are your plans to educate the public on how medical aid schemes work? And how can we actually protect the survival of medical schemes as legislation changes? And have you got a budget for this? I'm very concerned about young people. I happen to know of a case of a young person who has just started teaching, and they have two small children. They cannot afford to pay the fees for medical, and they've just got a hospital plan, and yet you know what it's like with babies. They're always thinking you go to the doctor once a week and it's about R1,000 you're paying out. So I'm just wondering how people can cope with these things where the costs are going up so much. And then, I wasn't in the committee previously, but I did understand that your previous annual report you had offered to assist the portfolio committee with investigating NHI in other countries and how we could make sure that what we have is going to be the best that it can be. Have you in fact done something like that? And just what have we been able to learn about from other countries? Thank you.
Those are the questions. I'm sure you can start searching. There's something on the slide by you, Dr. Bosho, about the amount of money. That's not that says medical insurance. Can you explain further as you answer the question then? Yeah. That's one that says medical insurance. There's medical aid schemes. There's medical insurance. And who regulates them? Are they being regulated by you? Or I'm looking at some of the things that we always see being advertised on TV. Tell me again about your client and everyone. But that's just to find out who regulates that. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Chair. years later. When we win the case, as we always win our cases, we win it 6 years after it was initiated. And there will then be a distortion, or apparent distortion in the reporting on the basis that one particular year we would have expended so much money and yet we would have recovered that 6 years later. Such cases, Chairperson, go not only through our adjudication process that we have outlined, appeals process, that is appeals committee, appeals body go to the High Court, and some go to the SCA, which is the Supreme Court Appeal in Plumbodin. We have had situations like that, very costly. When we recover the money back, it comes back into the fiscus, and the CFO will attest to that. So the decrease in that, our decrease in the budgeting inequality is based on the basis that we will win our cases in the medium to long term. The reporting will only take place after this reporting of this financial year going on forward. We mitigated against that by considering the senior legal officer as an additional staff member within that department in order for us not to outsource work that can be done internally. So that's one of the ways of dealing with the legal fees. The international partnerships that is budgeted for in here, you see in that page that there's a 100% increase in budgeting for it, precisely because we haven't had, we in the past we didn't concentrate on the aspect of collaborating with international partners that are involved in the regulation and in private insurance, health insurance industry. The exercise that we have involved ourselves in the NHI has shown us as a council and as a country that in fact some of these initiatives, including initial development and this implementation, cannot be done purely by looking inwardly. That means only concentrating on the South African experience. We have to learn from the international countries. How have they dealt with similar challenges of introduction of the NHI? Many countries, and I'm told the very same HPC has had study groups in various countries in Brazil and in Thailand and in others where NHI is implemented, for instance. And as much as we would like to participate in that as the Council for Medical Assistance, it's not our terrain to be in that, but our duty, because we've got recession monitoring, we've got a responsibility to find out what is going on out there and advise the minister and the Department of Health, in this regard. So our international partnership is an attempt by the Council of Medical Schemes to contribute to the development of health policies with regards to this. Yes, we meet, made a budget for meeting in once a year with these. These international partnerships are expensive. We cannot afford to be having two or three more meetings, both internally and externally, going on forward. And therefore, our duty is to at least make sure that we either invite them to come in or we go out and meet with them within the limited budget that we have. Just to report, Chair, that over the period and the review, we have met with people from Ghana who have had this. They have come in to us, and we have interacted with them with regard. And recently, we met with Namibia, and the part which is not part of this OECD countries that we interacted on the regulation of the private hospitals doesn't fall in this period under review. It will be the next one. We had it that took place in Paris, and one of our senior management went there. So we consider international partnerships critical at the development stage of any change in policy. That's one of the things that we have done. That takes care of the CEO's program and meetings in one question that did arise. How does the public know about the Council for Medical Schemes? I have answered that, but if there's any query in addition, we'll be able to do so. I just want to deal briefly, more importantly, with the cancers and the biologicals. It's a critically very important question. Nobody knows when one is going to be struck by cancer of any kind. And it has reached us within the Council for Medical Schemes that the cancers and the development and the treatment of various types of cancers is continuing. It is expensive. The biologicals is one type of treating these cancers. The level of care that many people who have got cancer need to receive differs. criticize Chairperson where this can cost up in the region of 650 to 700,000 rand per annum to get treatments with regard to this. If a member contributes to a medical aid scheme an amount of 30,000 to 40,000 per year, because you can take, if you have one member or two members with beneficiaries, one member with a few beneficiaries, the total contribution to the medical scheme will hardly, in fact, to never reach an amount of 700,000 per year, which means what you put in the medical aid scheme cannot be equal to what you take out when you suffer from these conditions. We then, that then poses a question on the sustainability of the scheme. And this is where the prescribed minimum benefits come in, because the prescribed minimum benefits, you know that we have won a case within the Council of Medical Schemes where we said when a condition falls under the PMBs, it must be paid for in full, which means if you have got, one has got cancer, that cancer should be paid in full. But look at the cost, as I have mentioned, you now literally obliterate completely the benefits that a member has. Probably will close down the scheme if I take the amount of having just a few of the members belonging in into that. That is the unfortunate part which we have to deal with in this very tight line of balancing between affordability to a medical aid scheme and the sustainability of the schemes themselves. We then look, and we're in the process of developing a capacity within the office to research even more alternative methods of treating these conditions. Biologicals are not the only way of treating these conditions, especially given cost at which we now have. So all of that is an area, but this is an unfinished story, Honorable Member, with regards to the cancer and affordability of these. And we'll be putting this to the panel, rather the subcommittees and relevant subcommittees in the LHI Ministerial Weather Committee that talks on the packages, health packages that must be part of it. I lastly is just to talk about the NHI and international experience. I think I have touched on that. I'm going to give over to the Chief Financial Officer and my colleague just to deal with the rest of the other questions that I have been answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In relation to the detailed expenses and the detailed explanations, we have explained them in the subsequent pages, but I want to assure the members of the committee that given that we're given a limited percentage within which we needed to work, we had to reduce some infamous other expenditures, and in some other instances we had to increase just by an inflation figure. Like for example, the question that has been asked with regard to the rental, why has the rental increased from what it was last year? We are explaining in the document that we are also planning to acquire more space because the office space that we have is not enough to accommodate the increase in the number of employees that we are having. As you can see, we are proposing to employ 5 more new people, but we do not have enough office space as envisaged. So that is the explanation with regard to the rental. The rental will therefore increase because we are going to acquire more additional office space for new employees. In terms of the repairs and maintenance, the repairs and maintenance also will relate to the rebuilding of that new particular office. Last year, we did not do much on the rebuilding of our office, but because we're going to acquire additional office space, we have to do some rebuilding. As you know, if you enter into a lease contract, the property owners will give you a certain amount, but there are certain amounts that you need to do, like your office partitioning, how you're going to partition your office and all those things. That must come from your own budget. So because you're going to get some additional office space, we're going to have to incur those particular expenditures.
I must be wrong, but the question, part of the question was saying, why do you continue renting? Why don't you buy your own space? Am I wrong? I think that was part.
Oh, okay.
Chair, the question of whether we continue to rent or buy a building is one that we would need to do a proper financial analysis on within the council. There are both arguments for or against. So
on that time. Just put that on and continue to write until such time that we are clear on how where we're going in the country in terms of the health reform. Okay.
I just want to make a follow-up question. The council, do they have any some sort of a study or analysis in terms of their future or the impact of any child to their children? Are you hearing that type of a study? That's what I want to know. Thank you.
If you just let me just come in and I know my colleague would like to make a point. The international experience shows that even a country like the United Kingdom that has got NHS since 1948 has a 20 has a 12% of its population under the private healthcare insurance. And many other countries have indicated that come for 5 years from now, or let's say fast forward 14 years, when the full NHI is implemented, will there be medical aid schemes or not? Most likelihood is that there will still be medical aid schemes in the country, and for as long as they are in existence, in whatever form, shape, or size, they have to be regulated, given the governance challenges that they are having, one, given the size of the industry that we're having, Chairperson had mentioned, the 100 billion rand industry that we have, likely to disappear on year 15, chances are not. And if it is there, they have to be regulated because we cannot go back to the pre-12-year period that we had where there was either no regulation at all of this industry or very poor regulation. Those medical systems will have to be regulated. That's one premise from which we move. The second premise that we move from Chairperson is that the medical aid schemes that currently are having will have themselves to change and do things and business differently. The same way as the regulator, that is ourselves, we have to change and evolve as we're going on forward. If we can ignore this high likelihood, we might find a situation where if the Ministry and Department of Health and HPC gives us a mandate to wind down over the next 5 years or over the next 14 years, are able to do that because we will then be assimilated and go back into the Department of Health or into the National Health Fund, which is part of the NHI. That we can do. But I just think it would be irresponsible of us as the Council for Medical Assistance if we cannot advise in this regard that well, for as long as you have got private health care insurance in place, make sure that the infrastructure is in place to regulate it properly to protect those members who believe that this is going to be the case. Lastly, the NHI fund and the NHI strategy says that there's mandatory contribution to it, mandatory contribution of the member, which means anybody else who belongs to anywhere else is an addition to that. I've said on a number of occasions and in the sense that there's going to come a time when members make a decision to continue paying on a mandatory basis as is required by law on one hand, and continue belonging to medical schemes because they wish they feel that's where they belong. When that time comes, a member himself or herself will have to make a determination, and we will then take a strategic decision at that point in time.
Just a further comment from the council side. We recognize that the NHI story is an evolving story. There's a broad framework been put in place and there's specific targets over the next 14 years. And as the registrar indicated, we certainly believe that there will still be a role for the council to play in terms of regulating medical schemes. And we've clearly articulated the willingness to participate and support the NHI process in whichever way the ministry feels fit, deems fit. And therefore, we've established an NHI strategy committee within the council that will continue to meet and look at the challenges that as they arise that the minister may put to us in terms of dealing with it. So while we don't have a specific framework or a plan in terms of what we will look like in 14 years' time, we certainly have put mechanisms in place to be able to deal with it as and when it arises.
Gracias.
regulator.
Yeah.
That has it.
Yes.
So, or if you planted the case, can we probably have an advice? Right? Because obviously, we want to say it seems as if they're doing the thing, and the members are not very well planted. But we need an advice from them as to how can we deal with that. Not in a way of collapsing them, but in a way of making sure that those members of those schemes are protected.
Chairperson, we've been involved through the Department of Health, the Financial Services Board, ourselves, and Treasury in discussions around this matter, and we've consulted with the stakeholders at CISA, the short-term insurance groups, over the past 2 or 3 years, and this draft implications which Treasury has published has been in full confidence. 5 minutes and then come back and then we'll continue with the question.